You're listening to Dottotech. Hello, I'm Steve Dotto, and you're listening to Dottotech. I'm glad you could join us today. This show is dedicated to helping you get the most out of your technology wherever you use it, at home, at school, or even at work. Well, this is show number 56 in Dottotech's now long and storied history. We do have a great show lined up. We've got Ian Bell joining us. Ian is the founder of Tingle and many other online properties, and he's an app developer. We're going to be talking to him about a couple of stories. Most interestingly, I want to talk to him about the phenomenon in the States of Kickstarter and other crowdfunding sources. In Canada, we are not able to do quite as much of this kind of crowdfunding concept because of investment laws. But in the States, it's increasingly becoming accessible for developers to access funding through the internet by posting offers on websites like Kickstarter to either purchase product before it's actually been built and developed, or for them to actually just solicit straight investments for shares in the company. Fascinating. They're really lowering the barriers for entry, not doing so much here in Canada, and Ian will be talking to us a little bit about the ramifications of that, as well as a whole bunch of other areas that Ian is interested in. A fascinating guy. I'm sure you'll enjoy the interview. Now, a note to all of you listening in the Vancouver area, especially the real geeks in the Vancouver area, there's a Tech Fest taking place April 28th at BCIT. Scott Guthrie, a vice president of Microsoft, is making a rare Canadian appearance as the keynote speaker. You can find information. We'll post a link to that at our site. But that is April 28th at BCIT Tech Fest with Scott Guthrie from Microsoft. Now, while you're visiting our website, why not make sure that you take a few extra seconds and enter to win? We're giving away a Slingbox HD, and that ain't bad. Joining me online now, Ian Bell. Ian, of course, an internet developer, the creator of Tingle we've had on the show in the past. How are you doing, Ian?
Good. How are you, Steve?
Good. How's the dating world going with Tingle?
Dating's tingling. We've got many, many users in our pilot city in Vancouver, and we're just getting ready to expand across North America and host parties all over North America to get people excited about Tingle.
For listeners, Tingle is a online dating app which works a little bit differently than some of the other apps in the fact that it's location based. Once you sign up, you go into a location. It lets you know others that have signed up for the dating app within the same location. So you can actually, it's kind of combining online dating and actual real visceral talking to somebody at the same time, which I think a lot of internet users might find a little bit intimidating.
And actually, we're going to have a new function which is a whole lot safer and actually a whole lot more interesting in terms of helping people discover one another, which is, we call it Radar.
Uh-huh.
And it just uses passive location tracking. And when we introduce people based on them being near each other, we don't actually say where they are. We just say that they're a certain distance away. And after talking to a lot of women about their reaction to some of the other dating apps that are out there, we realized we needed to fix that and make it a whole lot safer.
Yeah.
So that's what Radar is all about.
You must be watching the comings and goings with the app world just with some with a lot of interest as the rest of us. Last couple of weeks we've had two major sales. Of course we'll get to the Facebook app acquiring Instagram in a minute. But the Draw Something, the acquisition by Zynga of Draw Something for some $200 million after the app was only out for a very short time, pretty impressive.
Yep, and it just shows that there's both virality and sociability around the creative process, right? It's pretty exciting.
I think the interesting thing is just how virally and how quickly that app grew. And before Zynga bought it, it came to my radar because my daughter, my 11-year-old daughter, 12-year-old daughter, was playing with her friends and her cousins. And I'm going, what's that?
We're past the era of simple, stupid games, right? With repetitive themes and, you know, these convoluted addiction cycles, and we're now into games as mind play, and that's a much more interesting space, right?
Probably healthier long term for us too.
Yep.
Not that Angry Birds won't be fun, but you know, playing an interactive game with somebody else that you're actually engaged, even socially, even though it's online. I think that's probably a healthier for us way for us to be moving. So I got to ask you, what's your take on the $1 billion for Instagram?
I did the math, and I think it's about $33 or $34 per user.
Wow.
And
is that a good price to pay for users?
Yeah, I call it Silicon Valley math, right?
Yeah.
I remember years and years ago, I was sitting in someone's office in Silicon Valley, and I think when Yahoo went public, it was valued at about $1,200 per user.
Wow.
And so for a while, all of Silicon Valley was benchmarking itself to that. And so clearly there's some benchmark around, you know, $33, $34 per user that a lot of people are ascribing, that they're referencing in order to value these companies. But I think it was about more than just that. I think it was about the imminent threat of Google buying.
It seemed knee-jerk. It seemed like we have to get in here before somebody else does. So it just came together so quickly, and it's such a massive number that I'm not sure dollars and cents are looked at the same way by, you know, organizations like Facebook and Google. You know, sorry.
There's your mom.
That's my mom. It's okay. We can wait on that call. But so I'm not sure that they look at the money quite the exact same way as regular folk do, because it's, you know, because the numbers are very skewed. But oh my goodness, you know what is, you know, Instagram had what, 17 people on staff? It's worked at what, some 70 some odd million dollars per person. Is the value? It's just an incredible, impressive number. Now, the reason that I contacted you is I saw you got quoted in a big CBC news story about Rogers being dastardly to some poor fella up in Kelowna, or Kamloops, I think it was.
It's funny. We did a phone-in show yesterday on Radio 1, and I think this kind of issue just becomes a touchstone for lots of people to complain about all the different sins committed by wireless carriers in their relationship with their customer. And it's, you know, it's disappointing to hear all that.
This is a case where the technology has probably confused the users, because the story was that a user got, or a Rogers subscriber, and this could have happened with Telus or any other carrier, I imagine, but they had an unlimited texting plan for their child. And their son texted back and forth with his girlfriend a lot. She installed a free texting app on her phone because she didn't have unlimited texting, I guess.
She didn't have a phone.
Oh, she didn't have a phone, so she was texting on her computer?
On her iPod Touch.
Oh, so she was going Wi-Fi off the iPod Touch, so in her Wi-Fi connection at home or wherever she happened to be. So yes. They were texting back and forth. He obviously wasn't on an iPhone because he could have used iMessage for it. Yeah. And this free service to her wasn't free, because every time he sent a text, it was being routed through the States and it was being charged as an international text. Did I get the genesis of it right?
Yep. Yeah, I'd like to see how that works, because it must have been like a 10-digit U.S. phone number.
Yeah, which a kid's not going to pay attention to.
No.
An adult might go, wait a minute, there's an issue here, but a kid's not going to pay attention to it.
They're going to think they're getting away with something, basically. And that's how that app was marketed.
Yeah. And so, consequently, there's a $1,400 bill. Still hasn't been resolved. He's not paying it, and they're putting him in collections. So
yeah, they're all going to court.
They're going to go to court. Wow. It's surprising that Rogers would do that, but I guess, you know, they have their reasons these days.
Yeah.
Now, the other thing I wanted to chat with you about is I've been following with a great deal of interest what's happening with this crowdfunding. And there's quite a difference between what can happen in Canada and what can happen in the States. But we've just had, there's been a new crowdsourcing project funded, a watch that's been funded to the tune of over $3 million on Kickstarter just in the last few days. But it's got a Canadian angle, because the inventor of the watch and the founder of the company was at Waterloo. He's down in the States now, but he started out at Waterloo. But this whole crowdfunding thing, we're kind of left on the outside looking in as far as Canadians go, aren't we?
Well, yeah, in some ways. I think, you know, Kickstarter is the site that these guys went to essentially solicit interest in the product they wanted to create.
And we should explain, many listeners might not know what Kickstarter is. It's a crowdfunding site which basically people can post projects and you can fund the projects. And typically, there's a quid pro quo there. In this case here, they're going to be building these watches, and they're finishing off the research and development of these fairly cool new watch. But what happens is you invest in it by purchasing the product downstream. So you're trusting that they're going to actually deliver product. They give you an offer saying, we're going to send you two watches if you give us $130 right now or something along that line. And so, but basically they're using these pre-orders to complete the funding of their project, meaning they don't have to go to venture capitalists. They don't have to go to other sources of money. And theoretically, projects can be launched much more quickly.
Or you could even just take that interest now, and I'm sure they are, and show it to a venture capitalist and say, look, see, here's all these people who pledged to pay when I produce the product. And use that to go raise money. But there's a great new wrinkle in the U.S. now, because they've relaxed the rules around secondary market investing and around what the notion of a qualified investor is. And so sites like Kickstarter can now be used to actually raise money for a startup. So you can put your prototype of your watch or your product or whatever, you can put it up there and you can solicit people to actually invest. And instead of getting the product, they get equity in your company.
That's a major change. Why is this not relevant in Canada?
We have much more conservative rules around who can invest in private companies in Canada, which is probably a vestige of empire, you know, and keep the rich people rich and the poor people poor. But there's a lot of people agitating to try and make a positive change to that so that consumers can actually invest at the early stage.
Well, when we look at the opportunity, I mean, you're an individual who has had many startups. You've gone through the process of raising money. You've brought companies into successful stages. So you've got a unique perspective on, you know, how hard you have to work for the funding to make ideas happen. So I look at the fact that in the States they're making it so easy for people to access money with these new rules. But then I also look at how they handled their mortgages. And I'm going, should we, you know, and I'm intrigued. Because a big part of me is going, I think we should be embracing this kind of thing in Canada. We're going to be left behind technologically if our, it's like our performers. If it's easier to build your career by moving down to the States, our good developers are going to move to the States because it's easier to find money down there. Is that a legitimate fear for Canadian development?
Well, I think we're dealing with that right now, even without relaxation of those rules, right? I mean, we have capital that flows like molasses in this country, and I personally have some serious concerns about the viability of what it is I do for a living in this country. But
it was easier when you were down in Silicon Valley.
Oh, by far. And if you look at probably the biggest challenge you face in Canada as a CEO of a startup is you spend 40, 50 hours a week just raising capital, socializing, getting to know people. Angel, you'll talk to an angel investor before you have any market traction, and it takes, if you don't already have a network built up because maybe you've been successful in the past or whatever, it'll take a first-time entrepreneur probably more than a year to close a single angel investor. And bear in mind that in order to get the funding to build what you want to build, you probably need to close 7 or 8 of those guys, so you've got to have that going in parallel, and you probably have to engage 30 or 40 or 50 people. To get Tingle going, I probably have talked to over the years as many as 90 different angel investors and venture capitalists.
Oh, my goodness. And so it just becomes a dog and pony show.
Yeah.
Time after time telling the same story and answering the same questions and then, you know, and then finally getting down to the brass tacks where they're not, they might be interested.
And there's a reason I'm doing this, and it's not because I like raising money, right?
Exactly.
It's because I'm a good product designer and a good marketer, but if I don't get to spend any time doing those things, I'm actually harming my own business. So this is what every entrepreneur in our country faces.
And so the sites like Kickstarter are going to dramatically change the rules, change the access to funding in the States.
Yep. And there will be Ponzi schemes and there will be scams and
people will lose their money. Yeah. Yep.
But you know, again, we're all big boys or girls, and that's the risk you take. And you know, if you don't do diligence around the person or around the idea, than caveat emptor, right?
Yeah.
But sites like AngelList, you know, if AngelList becomes a player in this style of investing, then you have a lot of social proof built around AngelList. I don't know if you've checked it out.
But, no, I haven't. I'm just looking at it right now.
Angel.co. And that is a great way for startups to raise money from noteworthy angel investors right now. And it could be adapted to take advantage of these new rules.
And is it available? It passes muster in Canada?
No.
Okay.
In the U.S. it does. My only point is that with all the social proof that's built around startups and entrepreneurs and investors on AngelList, you have probably a much, it's like eBay, right? You have a much lower risk of reputation damaging scams or fraud or anything like that.
Well, it's interesting how with Kickstarter, AngelList looks to me a lot more business oriented and a lot more structured. With Kickstarter, it's very much a social networking site where you feel like you're part of a movement as you jump on board and you fund projects or not. It's caught that real social flavor.
Yeah, I think that's its strength for sure. AngelList is more stuffy and it's more inside baseball for people in the technology industry, and it'll only typically attract those types, right?
Well, either one, we're going to have to find ways of making the money flow into developers' hands in Canada a lot more easily, or we're going to end up becoming I think it's going to be very similar to the entertainment industry. As you say, it probably already is.
It already is. There are more. I'm very famous for having tweeted many years ago that there are more Canadian venture capitalists in Silicon Valley than there are Canadian venture capitalists in Canada.
Wow.
And there are probably double the number that service the tech industry in Silicon Valley than there are in Canada. So that's why organizations like C100 and some efforts from the Canadian consulate actually in Silicon Valley are really helpful to Canadian entrepreneurs. But the problem I have as a patriot is that we're basically forklifting our most talented people, and we're shipping them to California, and the people we're enriching are Americans with our activity.
Now, you do have one other product that I've been dying to talk about on air, and it's called Rosterbot. Now, I think it's appropriate timing with the summer softball season and the ultimate season just about to hit, and of course the Canucks just about to bow out, so we now have time to look at other things. Tell me about Rosterbot.
So I play hockey a lot. Like in a typical week, I'll play four or five or six games in a week, sometimes two games in a night, and I'm a goaltender, so that means I'm often in.
That means you're popular.
Yeah, especially towards the end of the season when everybody gets tired or hungover or injured. And so I have an enormously difficult time keeping track of my schedule. And a few years ago, I started actually once in a blue moon, I'd miss a game. Or a couple of times, I actually drove to the wrong rink and ended up, you know, having to make a high-speed chase back to eight rinks or wherever it was I was supposed to be. And so I started thinking about ways to organize that. And I've often thought about a solution to this problem of team management, but believe it or not, until 2008 or so, I don't think everybody had an email address. And I think BlackBerry is getting into the hands of contractors and plumbers and folks who have real jobs was a big sea change moment. And that's when I realized that you could maybe use email to actually organize your sports teams. And so Rosterbot's just like an Evite for teams, if you've ever received an Evite to a wedding or a party or something. The only difference being that you have a consistent number of people on a consistent roster of people on the team and, you know, recurring events, maybe at different times of the week or according to a weekly schedule or a monthly schedule or whatever it is. And all it does is it sends out email to all of those people and solicits an RSVP and then fills up the roster. And it has some more complicated features like dealing with full-time and spare players, so you can actually prioritize which players can RSVP first, and dealing with things like goalies and pitchers and specialist positions, so you know you might only want to have one goalie but you've got three goalies on your roster. It always makes sure you've got that player signed up to play, so that you don't show up at the rink and there's not enough people or not enough goalies or not enough whatevers.
And is it free?
It's free.
And so basically, does it work well in other sports?
So yeah, it actually is very, very generic. There's more than 150 different sports or activities that are on RosterBot. And it's everything from poker nights to hockey's the second most popular sport, much to my disappointment. Soccer's much more popular.
That sucks.
Actually, there's a I love this one. There's a Marine Corps Reserve unit that uses RosterBot to organize their weekend exercises. So if they're going to go and conduct, I don't know, some sort of combat exercise somewhere in Florida, then they organize the crew via RosterBot. Crazy.
Okay, business-wise, if it's free, you're not in this just for fun. How is it going to make money?
Well, right now it's just in a stage. I mean, I built it in 2008 and sort of kicked it out to the world. Didn't have time to promote it or do any marketing. And it grew from about maybe 100 users, most of whom were friends of mine in the first week, to 18,000 users today and north of 1,800 different teams. So we're still in the stage of experimenting with it, seeing what uses people have for it, and then building features to sustain those specific uses. And as it grows, we're going to start finding ways to offer people services they'd be willing to pay for. There's also some opportunity to do some advertising and stuff like that. I've tried advertising within RosterBot in the past, but it wasn't generating meaningful returns, so I just turned it off.
Okay. And then at some point, it's all about critical mass. You know, you grow it enough, and maybe Facebook buys it, you know?
Well, sure. But, my goal is just to have a great service that solves my own problem and hopefully that of a lot of other people.
And it keeps you organized as to which rink you're supposed to be at and who you're playing for that day. And you don't end up playing for the same team on both sides.
In an ideal world, all the teams I play on use RosterBot, and I just subscribe to a schedule that pops up on my computer automatically and tells me where I'm supposed to go, right?
It's not a bad idea. I like the idea. It's you know, and when you think about the least appreciated position on any of these teams is the person that has to put the team together and make sure everybody shows up and in communicating with them all and getting them all to the right place at the right time.
Yeah, I have a friend named Stuart who hopefully doesn't listen to this program, and he's a terrible hockey player, but everybody puts up with him because he organizes hockey.
he might be saying that, Ian, there's not many goalies out there. You might be saying he's a terrible goalie, but he's a goalie.
Exactly. Now you're on to me.
I think that's pretty much a common story for most goalies.
So anyway, we're going to shoot a video soon that says with RosterBot, you don't need Stuart.
Oh, poor Stuart. It's going to be like everybody wants Albert. Wish we had a guy like Albert.
Exactly.
The classic Canadian Tire commercial.
We need Albert, right.
That's right. We need an Albert. The Canucks need an Albert.
The Canucks need a line of Alberts.
I think the NHL is getting what they sowed last year in the finals. If they'd called the rules, I'm gonna get on my soapbox. If they called the game the way the rules were written and the way that they made a deal with the rest of the world or with the NHL, the Canucks probably would have won the Stanley Cup last year, and everybody would be building speedy and skilled teams.
Exactly.
Instead, they're reaping what they've sown, and because they allowed a team that broke two people's backs with impunity to win the Stanley Cup, they're now getting this. It's just turned into a travesty. I don't know. It's exciting to a certain extent watching this violence, but it's also terrifying to watch what's going on in the league this season. So
yeah, and now all the fast guys with good hands end up stuck in the East Coast Hockey League.
Or concussed. Or
yeah,
concussed.
Okay. I mean, St. Paul's, yeah.
It's just an open season on the heads right now. Oh, brutal. Yeah. Well, that'll have to be another show. We'll have to talk. I'll turn Dotto Tech into
Dotto on sports.
Dotto does sports. I think enough others are doing that, and nobody respects my opinion in that area, but they do respect it on technology, as I respect your opinion on what's happening. Thanks so much, Ian. A bit of an abbreviated Dotto Tech this week as I am off to New Orleans. I've got a speaking engagement down in the far, far south. I actually have never been to New Orleans, so this should be a fairly interesting trip for me. At any rate, it's putting me up against the clock, so it's going to be an abbreviated show this week. But Ian gave us more than enough great content, I think, to make it worthwhile. Join us next week. Actually, next week we're going to be talking about internet security for our families and kids. Merlin Horton is going to be joining me. Should be a really fascinating conversation. Merlin is one of the real leading experts on how kids are using the internet and where they put themselves at risk. So I think it's going to be a terrific show. Reminder, drop by the website, enter to win the Slingbox HD. And I look forward to seeing you all again next time right here on Dotto Tech.